please.
Thank you. So first of all, I would like to thank the organizers for the invitation. It's really great to be here. And yeah, we'll speak about SUSY models with very heavy scalars, with quarks and fermions at the PeV scale, at the scale of 1,000 TeV, and how these models can be probed with low-energy processes, with flavor observers, and with EDMs. So if we look at the various SUSY models that are being considered, I try here to characterize them in a very simplistic way by the amount of model-building effort that go into them and the amount of fine-tuning of the electroweak scale. And things like models of natural SUSY would be in this corner, in this plane here. So by construction, they should have a very small fine-tuning of the electroweak scale. But at the same time, you have to put a lot of effort into these models in order to make them viable. So you need light stops in order to reduce the fine-tuning. At the same time, you don't see light stops at the LHC. So we have to hide these light stops. At the same time, light stops also mean that the Higgs mass is typically too light. So you have to make a lot of effort to make these models work. In the going into the orthogonal direction, there would be models of mini-split SUSY, as they're called. There you accept that the electroweak scale is to some extent fine-tuned, but now your guiding principle is that you should put as least model-building effort into them as possible. So you just let the model do what it wants to do, and you don't put in any additional structure on top of it. And the spectrum one has in mind for these mini-split SUSY models looks roughly like that. At the 1,000 TeV scale, when there's the scalars of the model, so the quarks, the leptons, and also the heavy Higgs bosons, they can get masses from Planck superoperators, so the gravity mediation, masses for these scalars of the order of the gravitino mass. The easiest way to give masses to the gauge genus is through anomaly mediation, so there will be typically a loop factor suppressed with respect to the scalars. Similarly, trilinear coupling to the A terms, there will be also be loop suppressed, typically. And in the end, also the Higgsino mass, and this is a bit more model dependent, so these models don't have a real preference where the Higgsino mass should be. It could be of the order of the gravitino mass, or it could, you can easily imagine that Higgsino mass is additionally suppressed. It, for example, breaks the Petri Quinn symmetry. So it's not hard to imagine that the Higgsino mass would be as light as the gauge genus, or even lighter. So the rough spectrum, again, the scalars around 1,000 TeV, and then the gauge genus, one loop below 1 TeV or 10 TeV, and the Higgsino either as heavy as the quarks or maybe as light as the gauge genus. Now, to say a few words about the Higgs mass in this setup, we saw this expression for the Higgs mass many times in other talks until now. So this is a tree-level expression for the Higgs mass in the MSSM. And then you have the one-loop relative corrections coming from here, the first part coming from stop mixing. In these models of mini-split SUSY, this is typically very small, so we have these small A terms. So this usually doesn't give a large correction. Instead, in order to bring the Higgs mass to 125, you really need this, the contribution from this large log here. And actually, if you look at this plane here, if you have scalars, if you have quarks around 100 or 1,000 TeV, and a small value of tangent beta around 2 or 3 or so, then you actually quite naturally get that Higgs mass of 125. So this, the 125 Higgs would be between these bands here. So this works very well. At the same time, now this 100 TeV to 1,000 TeV quarks and also leptons, they can be now probed with, in principle, with low-energy observables. So the, if we look at this mini-split SUSY philosophy, so that you don't should put any model-building effort, then you would also assume that there should be now a very generic flavor structure of these quarks and leptons. So there should be no flavor symmetry or anything which imposes additional structure on the soft masses of the scalars. So very generically, one can parameterize them Rankine pyramid drives the flavor structures in these squirrel gas lepton masses and by these so-called mass insertions, these deltas. Someone writes soft masses as a universal term. And then these deltas, which are 3 × 3 matrices in flavor space, and generically all these entries of these deltas should be of order 1. Now, for the purpose of concreteness, for all the plots that you will see in this talk, I will set the relevant deltas always to a fixed number, to 0.3. And you can easily then rescale everything that I show you because I will show you always an explicit dependence on these deltas of the various observables that I will consider. Now, actually, there are a large set of low-energy observables that actually can probe these high scales, these scales of 100 TeV to 1,000 TeV. And these are electric dipole moments, observables in meson mixing, and also charged lepton flare variation processes. And I will go through these three classes of observables in this talk. So let's start with EDMs. If for one moment we switch off flavor violation, then these are the typical contributions, the typical SUSY contributions to EDMs that one gets. For example, in the case of the electron EDM, the SUSY contribution would be proportional to the mass of the electron. Similar for up quark EDM and up quark chromo EDM, they will be proportional to the up quark mass. These contributions for TeV scale to this spectrum, these contributions are typically very sizable. So if you have order 1 phases, for example, in the xeno mass or the gluino mass, then a TeV scale spectrum actually would be excluded by measurements or by the non-observation of EDMs. However, once you go a bit above the TeV scale, several TeV or around 10 TeV, then actually order 1 phases are still allowed by such by the EDM constraints. Now, if you switch on these order 1 flavor violating mass insertions, then actually the EDM, so the contributions to the EMs get a very large boost. So I don't have to pick up anymore the mass of the first generation fermions, but I can go through the third generation without paying any price because all this mixing, these flavor mixings are assumed to be of order 1. So now the electron EDM is proportional to the tau mass, the up quark EDM and the up quark chromo EDM, they're proportional to the top mass. So this really boosts the sensitivity of EDMs to very high scales. Another important thing to keep in mind here is that all these bun loop contributions to the EDMs, they're proportional to the hexeno mass, so they are particularly important if the mutrim, if the hexeno mass is large of the order of the quark masses. Also important point is that these quark chromo EDMs here, they are proportional or they're enhanced by a large log, a log of the gluino mass squared over the quark mass squared. And therefore, in this mini-split spectrum, where you have this loop factor between them, they are particularly important. Now that you have this large log, you might wonder if how reliable those predictions are, if one should resum these logs, and actually one can resum these logs straightforwardly. So one has to perform a two-step matching procedure. One first integrates out the quarks. This will generate such a 4 fermion operator with 2 up quarks or generally 2 quarks and 2 gluinos, and then one runs this operator down from the high scale of the quarks to the scale of the gluino, and in this running, this 4 fermion operator will generate a chromo dipole operator for the quarks, and through this running procedure, then through large E running, one can resum these large logs, and the effect of this resummation is shown here. So I call this K factor. This would be just the ratio of the correctly resummed chromo EDM divided by the leading log approximation. So if one is there in this regime of one has this hierarchy between the quark mass and the gluino mass, one can have this resummation actually gives a order 1 correction, so it can enhance the chromo EDM by almost a factor of 2 or so. Now that we have this reliable prediction for the chromo EDM and for the EDMs, you can see what are the current constraints on the quark scale that we can derive from the EDMs. And this is shown here in these two plots. They show the plane of the squark masses against the gluina mass, and here squark mass against tangent beta for the case where the xeno mass is heavy, and assuming order one CP rating phases. Then one sees that the current constraint on the neutron EDM, for example, already can probe squark masses at the order of 100 TeV, quite robustly for a very large range of gluina masses and tangent beta. Even better, there are prospects to improve the bound on the neutron EDM and also bounds on, for example, proton EDM down to values of something like 10⁻⁸ electron centimeters, and one would sit here. Then one would start to probe really squarks at the 1,000 TeV scale. Similarly, in the lepton sector, here are the bounds coming from the electron EDM on the plane of the lepton mass versus the beno mass, and here's lepton mass against tangent beta, again for a large mu term. And here one sees that currently the bounds on the electron EDM, they probe scales lepton masses at the order of several tens of TeV. But again, if you look at the expected improvements on bounds on the electron EDM, one can improve this sensitivity quite a bit, and one starts to be sensitive to leptons at the 100 TeV or several hundred TeV scale. Okay, as I said, all these bounds are particularly important if the mu parameter is large. If it is small instead, the most important effects then come from a two-loop. So these are these two-loop bar C diagrams, which have Venus and Hixinos in the second loop here, which can be very important. And they are completely independent now of the squark masses and the lepton masses, so they only are sensitive to the light part of the spectrum, in this case the Hixinos and the Venus. And if the corresponding phases here again of order one, the predicted or the generic predictions for EDMs coming from these two-loop effects are at the level of 10⁻²⁸ electron centimeters for the electron EDM. And this, as I said before, this is well within the range of proposed and planned experiments. So now, both at for low values of mu, where these two-loop effects dominate, and for large values of mu, where these one-loop flavored EDMs dominate, one can have chances to probe this scenario. Oh, this is just some example. Oh, yes, this you can see from basically. Oh, well, if you make the Venus lighter, then the two loop becomes more important. The two loop becomes more important. The one loop becomes less important for lighter Venus. So for the one loop, the parameter dependence on the Beno mass here was shown here. Though the lighter the Beno, the less important becomes the two-loop guy, but the one-loop guy, but the two-loop guy, of course, becomes more important the lighter the V noise. And on this plot, the same thing now with the neutron EDM, which also for light Hixinos is dominated by these two-loop contributions, which give a neutron EDM at the level of 10⁻²⁸ again. And then for large values of mu, you have these one-loop flavored EDMs, which allow to probe for these large values of mu 1,000 TeV squarks. Yep. Yes. So I didn't assume any specific relation between the Gaetano masses. So. In a normally mediation, we would have a strict prediction for that, but not really. I mean, you can, for the low, I mean, the gluina mass only enters in the case for this, in the case of large mu, and there I showed you the parameter dependent again in this plot here. It's actually very flat with the gluina mass, so it doesn't change very much. And you can, I mean, these anomaly mediated relation between the Gaetano masses come from anomaly mediation. You can easily imagine that this can be changed by, for example, threshold effects when you integrate out the Higgs xenon, or if there are new other additional states, additional vector-like states. You can there are many ways one can easily change these relations between genome masses. So I didn't make any specific assumptions. I just took some reference values here. Good, so let's continue to meson mixing. And it's very well known that meson mixing observers can probe generic new physics at very high scales. So probably we've all seen these type of tables here that show the bounds on the physics scale that one can derive if one assumes that one adds high dimensional operators to the standard model that can lead to, that can mediate meson mixing. And assuming that these coefficients that come with these operators are of order one, so one can derive bounds on this new physics scale lambda. And these scales are extremely high. In case of kaon mixing, they go up until something like 300,000 TeV, so extremely high scales can be probed in principle with meson mixing. In the case of the MSM, in case of SUSY, these operators would be induced at the loop level, so these coefficients are not order one, but they are loop suppressed. So the scales that will be probed are not as high, but still they are very large. In case of kaon mixing, it actually does reach already now, with the current precision of the standard model prediction, one reaches scales around 1,000 TeV, assuming that the new physics phase that enters here is of order one. So shown here is a responsible diagram. This is standard Gluino box diagrams that give rise to kaon mixing. If these mixing angles between the strange quark and the downed quark are large, and if there's this large hierarchy between the Gluino mass and the quark mass, then these SUSY contributions have a very simple structure that basically only depend on the quark mass and not on the Gluino mass, and also not on any other model parameters, so only on these flavor mixing angles and the quark mass. And as I said already, if the corresponding phase of these flavor mixing angles is of order one, the scales that are probed by kaon mixing are at the level of 1,000 TeV. In case of char mixing, the scales you can reach are not as high. So with the current constraints on TP violation in char mixing, you go until something like quarks of around 50 TeV. If you consider possible improvements on CP violation in char mixing, you can go a bit further above 100 TeV. B mixing is not as powerful, even if you consider possible improvements. So these are always these dashed lines. If you include possible improvements at LSAB and Bell 2, you might reach out to quarks at 20 or 30 TeV, but kaon mixing and char mixing is much more powerful. If you assume that these are not C improvements, these are improved measurements of CP violation in B mixing. So C improvement would help to improve situation when you have no phase, so then you would from the mass differences, you could hope with three improvement to go a bit higher here in that case. For this 0.3 that I've chosen, it works pretty well, actually. So we checked that it works pretty well. If you go to even larger values, 0.5, 0.6, 0.7, then at some point it breaks down. But I'm using it for these graphs, yeah. But for 0.3, it works actually pretty well. To some extent, yes. But I mean, as I said, I mean, even this 0.4, 0.5, it still actually works quite good. The button search approximation works much better than I would expect, actually. So even though it's 0.3, you would expect 30% correction from the higher order, but it's typically much less. So you, because with 0.3, you already. Oh, you only need one more mass insertion for the next order. For example, to get a kaon mixing, instead of going from strange to down directly, you could go from strange to bottom, from bottom to down. So instead of one mass insertion, you get two. So you always have one mass insertion more. But even though it's 0.3, it's not 30% correction. It's much less, actually. Anyway, so The last set of observers, charged lepton flare violation. Again, generically, mu to E transitions are very sensitive to generic new physics. The current bounds on things like mu to E gamma, mu to 3E, or mu to E conversion in gold, they can probe new physics at around 1,000 TeV, and with improvements, improved bounds on processes like mu to E or mu to 3E or mu to E conversion, you can hope to reach scales of 10,000 of TeV. Again, in SUSY now, these processes will be loop-induced, so you won't reach as high, but still, you can hope to probe very high scales for sleptons. In the case of mu to E gamma, here the two main contributions that lead to the mu to E gamma decay is loops with B-nos and loops with V-nos. In the case of the B-no loop, like there's something similar compared to the EDM thing, to the EDM constraints, and it's the enhancement factor of the tau mass over the muon mass, because one can go through the third generation, and these contributions they are very important if the Higgs D-no mass is large. Instead, the B-no contribution, they are particularly important if the Higgs D-nos are light, and they are enhanced by a large log of the V-no mass over the slepton mass. So if you look at the current sensitivities of the branch ratio of mu to gamma, now again in the plane of the slepton mass against natural beta and slepton mass against the Gaugino masses, and one sees that one currently probes scales of, again, tens of TeV. And if one, for example, includes the expected bound from a MEC upgrade, one could improve these bounds a bit further, so one might be able to reach slepton masses of 100 TeV for large values or largish values of tangent beta. So the plots before, they were for the case that the Higgsino is heavy. In this case, now the Higgsino is light of the order of the Gaugino masses, and then one sees that the sensitivity is actually even to higher scales. The process is very strongly correlated with mu to E gamma. It's a mu to 3E decay. One has something called dipole dominance, so the same operators that mediate the mu to E gamma decay, they also dominate the mu to 3E decay. Therefore, one gets a very strict relation between these two branching ratios. And the current the corresponding branching ratios that are shown here, the predicted branching ratios in the slepton mass versus tangent beta, slepton mass versus Gaugino mass planes, they're actually basically parallel to the mu to E gamma branching ratios. The current constraint on mu to 3E are much weaker than the mu to E gamma constraints. But if one, for example, looks at the proposed mu to 3E experiment, this is expected to get a very strong bound on the branching ratio of mu to 3E, and this would be actually sensitivities are just slightly better than the sensitivity from the mu to E gamma experiment. And again, before for heavy Higgsinos, here for the light Higgsinos. Finally, mu to E conversion. Now there, in addition to these dipole operators, there are various other contributions. You have contributions from boxes, set penguins, or also photon penguins. Depending in which region of parameter space you are, some of them are more important than others. In case of a light Higgsino, these set penguins are log enhanced. In case of this, in this mini split through this framework, there's this hierarchy between the sleptons and the V-nos. Here you have a log enhancement of the photon penguin. And putting these things together, again, the same plots as before. Now the sensitivity for the branch ratio of mu to E conversion in aluminum, this is the expected sensitivity of the mu to E experiment. And here in green is a region which is excluded by the current measurement of mu to E conversion in gold. And again, the current constraints at the level of tens of TeV But with the sensitivity of the MeToo-E experiment, we can reach out to several hundreds of TeV for the leptons. So now everything that I showed you summarized in one plot here makes the assumption that the quark mass and the lepton mass are the same, and also it's the same as the Higgsino mass. So you have this mass scale against tangent beta for a particular set of fixed Higgsino masses. And what is shown here in this band is a region that is preferred by the Higgs mass, by the 125 GeV Higgs mass. And you see these are the current constraints that one gets under these assumptions here. This mass insertion is 0.3 and phases of order 1. So K-on mixing is currently the only observable that reaches out to these very high scales of 1,000 TeV, with all the other constraints here, char mixing and neutron EDM around 100 TeV, and then the lepton sector, the observable sensitive to two leptons at the level of tens of TeV. And then in the foreseeable future, all these constraints, all these observables will be much more sensitive. So in addition to K-on mixing, also now the neutron EDM will be sensitive to the PeV scale. Char mixing can improve a bit, and then there's a large set of observables that can probe leptons at the 100 TeV scale. So these are the conclusions. If one tries to avoid model building efforts and one is led to this mini split through the spectrum, one has Higgsinos at the 1 to 10 TeV range, as quarks and leptons at 100 to 1000 TeV. In that framework, 125 GeV Higgs can be easily accommodated. One point which I didn't have time to talk about is that with this generic quark flavor violation that one assumes here, it actually has the possibility to generate the quark masses, the standard quark masses radiatively from SUSY loops. And what I discussed in this talk here is that there are many low energy observables that actually can test this mini split SUSY framework. When it's order one flavor violation, then one can have many observables that are sensitive to PeV scales or very high scale quarks. GP violation care mixing already probes the PeV scale, and there are several other observables like char mixing, EDMs, or mu2e conversion in aluminum that will have sensitivity to these scales in the near future. Thanks.
Many thanks for your talk. We have time for questions. Question.
So you have shown that the strongest constraints actually come from the K-on mixing, but there is no improvement on those anticipated in the near future. Now, what would be the investment needed to improve on those?
Well, so the limiting factor there is the standard model prediction. So the standard model prediction has a currently uncertainty of 10%, 15%, and you really would need to improve this significantly in order to make progress there. So on one hand, this means better hadronic matrix elements from the lattice, and on the other hand, also better precision on the CKM input. So actually, I think the dominating uncertainty in this epsilon K observable, which measures the P violation in K-on mixing, the dominant uncertainty is actually the CKM element VCB. Mm-hmm. And so unless this improves, the precision on this VCB improves substantially, this constraint from K-on mixing won't improve very much.
Okay.
There's some more questions.
I have a question. I mean, this is very interesting. I mean, so you have, in principle, in this scenario, sensitivity to higher scale than we could, for instance, in Z prime. This was a very simple model with two parameters. You cannot move very much. But the question is, so you really are sensitive, but the question, how could you, is are there any correlation you would find that would distinguish that this is this scenario and not something else?
There are not many correlations which are predicted in this scenario, because, I mean, here for this study, we just assume that you have generic order one mixing angles. So unless you really specify certain flavor structure, you wouldn't get a lot of correlation between various observables. The only thing that is predicted, for example, which is very independent of such considerations of flavor mix angles, this is dipole dominance in mu2e gamma and mu2e3e. So this model would predict a very precise ratio of these branching ratios.
No, but your main message, okay, already maybe not partly, but here you have explicitly that things like electric dipole moments, lepton flavor violation, of course, has much better way to test the short distance scales rather than quark flavor physics, partly because you have at the moment no data. And I think the electric dipole moments will probably go to neutron to 10 to minus 28 experimentally, so you may really reach. Okay.
There are some more questions? Well, if not, let's thank Wolfgang. So since we are very ahead of time, according to the schedule, we will reconvene after the coffee break at 4 o'clock, please.